Relive the story of Survivor Karamoan, Blood versus Water, and the original Brains versus Beauty versus Brawn by pre-ordering those seasons on DVD on Amazon.com. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob as a Podcast whenever you start your Amazon shopping with our link, robasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, it's robasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with another week of taking a look at the story of Survivor Ko Rong here in the Wiggle Room with Josh Wiggler.
Check it out.
Josh.
Wiggle.
I am, as usual, literally wiggling this time because I am shivering because it is very cold in my room and I'm under a blanket.
You're like...
And I'm like, brr!
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, brr! That's what I've been like all week. It's so cold here. New York, what's going on in here? It's terrible.
Yeah, you are not out there in Ko Rong right now.
We're in the middle of Ko Rong. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, baby.
Yeah, you could use a little heat.
I need some of that heat. Give me that heat, Sydney. Oh my God. Need some of that. Need to borrow some of that.
So I don't want to pick up too much where we left off on the voicemails.
Unbelievable. You two are crazy. Crazy people.
Yeah, fun always voicemail show.
Always going to be a crazy time when you get Mike Bloom in the mix.
Sure, sure. Josh, so how are you doing this week?
I'm all right. I'm good. I am excited to talk this one through the end of Kyle Jason. I was very surprised to see Kyle Jason go home. Definitely didn't think that he was going to be the guy going into the week or throughout the episode because it was such a quiet episode for Jason. And I really thought that Jason was an end game character. Like, I thought that he was like a final boss. But it turns out, no, it's a twist. He's not the final boss. He's like the boss before the boss. He's Golbez and someone else is Zeromus.
Exactly. That's totally what I was thinking.
Final Fantasy IV reference. How about that?
No, but we talked about him last week on the Wiggle Room as potentially that he said that the only person who played this game correctly was Russell Hantz. And was he doomed to have the same sort of Russell Hantz finish to go to the end and then get beat by a player that they thought played a worse game? But that is not the case. That is not how it played out.
Incorrect. It did not happen that way. No, he didn't do anything in his final episode. He was just like, all right, well, I guess I'm done. May as well vote for Joe. Goodbye.
Yeah.
So quiet. So quiet. Really surprisingly quiet.
So did you feel like it was an unsatisfying end for the character of Kyle Jason?
A little bit. A little bit. I mean, I guess it was, you know... The fact that like he's really huffing and puffing about no one playing the game with him and how that's frustrating and everything like that was, I guess, slightly enjoyable, slightly pleasurable to get that. It was, you know, there was some added depth in him going to the animal sanctuary and getting to talk about his kids again and how his kids are going to freak out when they see him with an elephant. So if you're looking for the extra layers of Kyle Jason, that was a nice touch. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, the story was a whole lot more about Ty kind of going back to the dark side a little bit and sort of owning his role as the new Sith Lord out there on Survivor Ko Rong, while Michelle is kind of coming into her own and really fighting back. So it was more their story than Jason's. Jason really, to the point that, you know, and you can't make a guy say something at Tribal Council if he didn't say something at Tribal Council, but he just had nothing to offer in his final boot. His final appearance. So that was a little disappointing, I did think.
Now, you called Ty a Sith Lord, and do you feel like that Ty has really become a villain? Because if anything, I felt like that Ty was more bumbling than evil.
Right. Well, who, you know, he doesn't have to be like a great Sith Lord. Like,
you know, I thought he was a little more Jar Jar Binks, I thought, than Darth Maul.
You're still saying we subverted that, Michelle?
Yeah. And he has that, his friend, the chicken.
No.
That's a little Jar Jar-esque.
He should have named his chicken Captain Tarples.
Oh my God!
That would have been really good. No, I mean, I think that he was in this episode, he was set up as sort of an antagonistic force, right? I mean, he is really steadfast in wanting to get rid of Michelle. You are hearing from other people's perspectives, especially Sydney and Michelle, who are like, I don't want to go with that plan. Ty's just dictating the tide. This is really obnoxious. I don't want anyone telling me how to play my game. And it's really only Aubrey who is sort of in this nexus point of, I don't want to not work with Sydney. I want to keep working with Sydney, but I'm really close with Ty. And Ty is being very rigid and being inflexible in his desire to go after Michelle. So I think that with all that in mind, he is set up in sort of this antagonistic light. And I think that that seems to be where some of the drama is right now. Has all of the power gone to Ty's head? Is it too much for him to handle right now?
Yeah. Does he have too many advantages in his pocket? Has he become like having the precious and now he sort of has a big head?
That is a better comparison. It's like he has the One Ring and it is slowly morphing him into something unrecognizable that talks to himself, that is constantly referring to himself as trying, trying. You know, he's just like, is constantly like trying to spit out a word. I feel like that's sort of what we're seeing. I don't think that the ultimate arc on Ty is that he's going to be this mean-spirited player or this really bad guy. But I do think that if we had thought that him vanquishing Scott was him sort of returning back to the light, I think that we are seeing now a version of Ty when the power gets to his head and what are the consequences of that. I think that's pretty compelling.
Now, of course, you got to speak with Jason. You did your exit interview with him for Parade.com. You can see those always when you go to robiswebsite.com/parade. Any interesting takeaways from your conversation with Jason?
I was actually really surprised by my conversation with Jason. I think that's one of the most memorable exit interviews I've ever done because, I don't know, I feel like a lot of the time you go on the phone with these people who have just been kicked off the show and they really want to justify a lot of what they did or explain why what they did worked or wasn't going to work or what you didn't see or anything like that. And with someone like Jason, who was painted in a fairly unflattering light for most of this thing, he was really a villainous portrayal for this guy. He had his whole big moment in the pre-emerge with Alicia and some other stuff along the way that just wasn't a phenomenal look. The sabotage thing, you know, for me and for many other people who are watching the show are kind of like, what are you thinking doing something like this? This just seems automatically like such a bad idea. So I was really looking forward to talking to Jason to get his takes on some of this stuff and to see, you know, was he not thrilled with the way that he looked on the show? Was he, you know, does he regret something like the sabotage? And I was really surprised that he really fully embraced it all and seemed to really love how he came off on the show. This was a guy who I think really enjoyed being the villain of Survivor Korang.
I mean, does he not embrace the suck?
He embraces the suck.
Yes,
he does. So yeah, he really embraces the suck, I guess. And I guess I was a little surprised by that. And I was especially surprised to the point where it was almost difficult to rebound and like continue with a new question when he was really defending the sabotage thing and saying like, not only do I think it was a good idea, but I would do it again. And I think it worked. And I'm sitting here on the other line of the phone, on the other side of the phone, being like, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, well, let's keep talking about that because I had another question, but I forgot because I'm surprised by this.
No, I had the same thing. I literally said, in what way did you feel like it worked?
Yeah. So, I mean, do I agree with a lot of his takes on his game? No, I really don't. You know, I still think that the sabotage thing is inadvisable. I think that that's a really bad call. You know, I've said a lot of people looked at that as jury poison, and he immediately challenged that and said, was it jury poison? Is it really jury poison? Because if you look at that jury before I'm voted out, I'm pulling a lot of votes from that jury. I wasn't out there. I have no idea what the true feelings were towards Jason amongst this cast. But based on what we saw, you know, and that's really all that we can judge by, I feel like that combined with some other things, I feel like the sabotage thing didn't help. And I think just for anybody, that just seems like such an easy way to rub people so, so wrong. So whatever rewards you're getting from psychological warfare and beating somebody down and, you know, driving them crazy and getting them to turn towards each other and think poorly, I feel like all of that is offset by the fact that you're leaving them with this really nasty memory that when you get to the end, all things being equal, could end you. So I was really surprised that not only did he like the move, that he would do it again in a second. He's like, yeah, I thought it was funny too. When Scott poured the water on the fire, that was great.
Yeah. I think that the move has merit if people don't know it was you. I think that if you could sort of create chaos, but nobody knows who did it and sort of people are blaming each other and getting upset with one another. Who's doing this to us? Was it you? Was it you? Was it you?
Yeah.
And then it turns into something that's really starting to break up the alliances. But I do feel like in this instance, in this season, I feel like it did unite that group of women against them. Only Julia, I think, was the only person that said, okay, well, those guys are just doing it for whatever reason. I still want to work with them. But we saw really Debbie, Joe, and most importantly, Michelle, and even Sydney, then it pushed them further over to the Aubrey camp. And I think that that was a problem for them going forward.
Yeah, he said that, you know, we got what we wanted out of it. And I guess I just don't know. What did you get? You know, what did you want? Because they really, you know, they turned against each other. They turned on Debbie to avoid the wrath of a super idol. And then they just bought themselves more time to win over the, you know, one half of the super idol team. So I don't know what they really gained by the sabotage thing. I didn't see any visible dividends that they earned from that. So I was surprised by it, but I really appreciated the honesty. I appreciated talking to somebody who just came on and was like, no, that was it. Like, that's fairly accurate. And I really loved it. Even if it wasn't a flattering portrayal, I appreciated his honesty in it. I respect that he really liked his take on the show, even though a lot of people really did not seem to. And he was a compelling guy to talk to. Mm-hmm. You know, you can definitely see, you know, how a guy like that is going to get cast on a show. He is a good talker. It was an engaging conversation, and I will never forget that exit interview. It was definitely very, very memorable.
In terms of what did that move ultimately do, I think that we can start to uncover that answer at the point that we have exit press with Aubrey, with Michelle, Sydney, people who were really going to be making that call at that next vote,
right,
where Debbie ended up getting voted off. I think that that's when we could start to unpack that a little bit further.
Yeah. One of the things I do regret is I didn't get to talk to him about why he felt Sydney had flipped. I did not get that answer out of him in terms of why he thought that Sydney decided no mas with her two blonde guys. I really would have liked to have gotten that side of the story, because Scott was pretty interesting in talking about how he and Jason, they really debated early on, Jenny or Sydney, who should we be aligned with? And ultimately they went with Sydney against Scott's best wishes, according to Scott. And I would have liked to have known a little bit more about why Jason thought Sydney had flipped. But what I was surprised by, even though I didn't get to ask that question, was Jason kind of volunteering his take on the people left in the game and talking about why he wanted to vote for Joe. I know he told you the same thing about how Joe didn't deserve to be there, or at least not ahead of him. He felt that Joe wasn't doing enough, and he said everybody else is doing something. His quote to me was, Sydney's been playing a fierce game. I have a lot of respect for her. She made a play and it worked for her. Obviously her play worked better than my play. She's still in the game and I'm not. Aubrey, the way she manipulated Joe and the way she was able to take Ty from me, she deserved to be there. And Michelle's doing her thing. Mm. So I don't know what Michelle's thing is, but that's how he described, you know, these three people, Sydney, Aubrey, and Michelle, who I think a lot of people have been talking about as the three likeliest winners of the season. He seems to have a good amount of respect for all three of them. I really liked your question to Jason, Rob, about what is he thinking as a juror at this point? What is he thinking about these people at this time in the game as he's just been kicked off? And I liked his answer that he's looking for gameplay. You know, I think that that's a pretty mature outlook from a juror.
Yeah, my fear was that in talking with Steven, who Steven really outlined the case why he thinks that maybe Ty could be the losing finalist that we were looking for, where he initially predicted it was Jason and bet that knowing is know-it-all trophy
right
with me. But I think that
it was ill-gotten gains.
Yeah. I thought that maybe it was going to be where Jason and Scott go to the jury and then really lead the brigade of, hey, Ty's a bad guy. We got to, you know, he screwed us over. Don't vote for him. Anybody but Ty. It didn't seem like that was going to be his mindset right from what he was saying.
Right. No, it doesn't. Based on what he was saying, it sounds like he has a fairly healthy view as somebody who got kicked out of the game in terms of who's playing well, why they're playing well. And I like that. I really appreciate that, that lack of bitterness. But yeah, I mean, those are my hot takes on Jason's hot takes. Really, really fun conversation. Always fun to talk to these people when they come off the show. And with a guy like Jason, who's an intimidating presence just on television, you know, I wasn't really sure what I was going to get. I was like, I hope this isn't a contentious conversation. Or if it is, at least I hope it's informative. And it wasn't contentious, but it was definitely not what I expected. It was a little bit more of a roller coaster. And I really appreciated his honesty. I thought that was pretty good.
All right. Well, speaking of hot takes,
we're in the middle of Korong. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, baby.
Yeah, let's get some more heat. Let's bring some more heat.
Some more heat. I feel like we have not talked a lot about Sydney on this show and the story of Sydney. And I think
we haven't since the pre-merge. We talked a lot about her once upon a time. We haven't been talking about her much recently.
Yeah, and just going back to the Nick boot, and really, she was the person who flips away from Jason and Scott. I said back at the time that I did not think that that was a good move for her. I was very worried about Jason and Scott getting back together with Michelle and Julia. Now, it looked like that could have been a possible outcome at one point in time, but it did not certainly play out that way. And I'm glad I did not stake the knowingest know-it-all trophy on that. I was definitely wrong at that vote in terms of it. And maybe that's a hole in my analysis where I feel like somebody making that sort of move at 10 is too early in the game, or maybe it just happened to play out in a favorable way for Sydney. But that's a discussion for another day. So here she is. Jason and Scott are gone. And it did look like that she was the one pounding the table, that this was the move that had to be made at this vote at the final six, and not going with Ty and getting rid of Jason. Here she is at the final five. What is the story of Sydney?
Well, she's the last bronze standing. So right off the bat, there's that, you know, and I think that that's in retrospect, not particularly surprising based on how we saw her play early on. Somebody who was really getting along with just about everybody, was close with Darnell right off the bat, but was willing to cut him loose because that's the way the tide was turning. Was really seemingly close with Jenny and flirting with the idea of this teaming up with Jenny and Alicia against Jason and Scott, somehow manages to maneuver that towards her benefit. We see when Alicia goes, Alicia is wishing Sydney well and not saying anything positive towards anybody else. I think throughout the whole story, we have been seeing Sydney as somebody who is much better than meets the eye. I think that some people looked at her and was like, oh, is this just going to be some musclehead out here, you know, playing a strong physical game, but not necessarily playing like the world's greatest strategic or social game. And not to say that she's playing the world's greatest strategic or social game, but she's really good. I think she's really good at being clear about what she wants, about uniting people that you wouldn't expect her to necessarily be super close with. I don't think many people would have come into this season looking at Aubrey and Sydney as a power couple, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think that there have been a lot of points along the way where maybe we should have seen this coming a little bit more, from Debbie saying, you know, I took one look at Sydney and I know that you got to be really, really smart to keep up a physique like that. That requires a lot of determination and, you know, self-discipline and everything like that. So I think that the story for Sydney has been bubbling all along, a little bit quiet, but it's been that she is pretty darn good at this. And she has been a fierce person to watch all along. And she's still standing here at the final five. She's the final bronze left. And I think that when you look at that group of six of the bronze, like, I think it's pretty clear to me, at least, that Sydney is lights out better than any of those others. So not surprised to see Sydney here as the final bronze. Where she goes from here, I don't really know. I question whether or not getting rid of Jason was the right call here for her. But I don't know necessarily how she would have been able to protect him. But if she could have gone to the end with Jason as the other person in the finals with her, I feel like that would have been a really great matchup and a pretty good story as well.
So where do you think that she should have made that move, at the final seven? Do you think that she should have, at last week when Julia and Michelle were talking about voting with Jason, do you think that that would have been the way to go? Because I kind of feel like that she's probably out at the final four in that scenario.
I think what's difficult is, you know, she really seems like she has wanted to go after Ty for a bit now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was a pretty decent plan to either get some idols out into the open or annihilate Ty. And you can now say that you're the advantage slayer. You're the person who got rid of, you know, the advantage and the other idol in the game. And that's a really great resume point. But she didn't take the swing. And I think that there's been a lot of fear about this possible super idol that Ty may or may not have possessed. It turns out he did not possess that. But I think a lot of people thought that second vote was a second idol. So maybe that's part of the fear, is like, who knows if there are votes coming for me? And when there's that level of uncertainty, you just don't take a swing at that person. But I feel like that was a really good time to go after Ty. And I think your options are still pretty open if you're Sydney going into the final six from there, where you can turn to Aubrey and Joe and say, we just had to get rid of Ty. You know, we still have four votes strong against Julia and Jason. We can still move forward, but we just had to get rid of Ty there. He's too powerful, too likable if he gets to the end. And I think that you can sell Aubrey on that in the moment, and then you can recalibrate and figure out if there's a way ahead with Jason still.
Do you think that there's a thing where it's like the Carrie Bradshaw problem with Aubrey, where it's like that you have Joe, who's Aubrey's friend, yeah, and then you have Ty, who's really connected to Aubrey, not so much to Joe. She was the one that sort of wooed him over. You have Sydney, who seems like her tightest ally is Aubrey, but it's Sydney and Ty don't really get along. Sydney and Joe don't really get along. And so she has all of these friends that don't ever hang out without her. And now they want different things. And she's really caught in the middle.
Yeah, she is. So who is she? Is she Miranda? What are we saying? Who's
Sydney?
Yeah, what's her role? Because you're saying Aubrey is the carry.
Certainly. Uh-huh. Well, I think that
Joe is a Samantha.
No,
obviously.
No. He's the Charlotte. He's like
the Charlotte?
Yeah, he's going to be
prim and proper.
Prim and proper, right.
Yeah.
Ty is flirting with everybody. So I guess
Ty is the Samantha. Yeah.
I think that probably Sydney might be the Miranda in this scenario. She's, you know, very snarky.
That's probably fair. Yeah, and Miranda's very like that, where Miranda is, you know, really don't come at me, bro, which I know is a Michelle line. But I think that that is really the Miranda MO, where she doesn't take BS. She doesn't suffer fools easily.
Yeah.
She's very smart. She is an attorney. She can defend her case. She can make her case. Very, very good with power plays. Does not forgive easily. You know, the whole Miranda versus Steve thing in Sex and the City, the movie, that really took a while to heal those wounds. Clearly, Sydney and Jason were never able to fully repair. I think that's pretty good. I think that Sydney is a Miranda.
Hold on. Does Michelle need to be Carrie?
I don't need to be Carrie, bro.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry about that. Sorry. She does not need to be Carrie, bro.
Oh, man. Carrie Broshaw. Wow, that's really
I know.
Funny. That's really good. That's really great. That's a great thing that's just happened.
Sex and the City aside, I mean, is this a problem for Aubrey that she has these planets orbiting around her, but they're not really talking to each other and they want different things?
Well, why is that a big problem for Aubrey? Isn't it great to be the person that everybody is trying to sort of, you know, maneuver through, that you're the person that is bridging all these gaps? It's a dangerous place to be if people are really cognizant of it and they want to knock you out because you are the center of the universe. I think that we saw that in the season previous. I think we saw that in 31 with why it made so much sense to idle out Andrew Savage, because he is the person that is really bringing a few of these alliances together and refusing to let anybody entertain the possibility of working with the Three Witches. And as soon as he's blasted out of the game is shaken up. So there is definitely reason to go after that person who is like the gravitational center of the universe, but only if you know that that's the person. And I don't know that it's quite that obvious that Aubrey is this person who is really dictating the social dynamics of the game.
All right, well, here's where the problem potentially comes in, where Aubrey just went to brunch with Joe and Sydney and Michelle, and Ty had reservations for another restaurant, and he went and he sat there at the table by himself and realized that he just got stood up.
Right.
And he has a hidden immunity idol at the next vote, and he can't get voted out.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a challenge. It's challenging, but like, we saw Aubrey was able to pull Ty in really unlikely circumstances, you know, fairly recently. I'm not that worried about Ty being that angry at Aubrey. I feel like this is something that can be sold back to Ty as, this wasn't a you problem. This is just the way things were going. I feel like Aubrey has talked her way out of worse with Ty. I think that she can get her way out of this one.
So, but what did you do with somebody who you just left out of the plan at the final five? Again, not to go too far down the strategy wormhole, but it's such an interesting problem going into this week. How do you solve this, as I called it with Parvati, like this Eric Reichenbach problem, where maybe the guy you want to vote off at the final five has immunity, and the people that you're working with, one of them needs to get voted out here?
Well, so I don't know that I really want to talk about the strategic part of it so much as I want to talk about the possibility that just because Ty has this idol, is he guaranteed Final Four? And I mean, I myself was watching this with my wife when the episode finished up. I looked at Emily and I said, Ty is in the finals. You know, the cool thing about Ty, surviving this week and having an idol next week is that Ty is going to be in that final episode, and I'm going to get to meet Ty on the red carpet at the finale, and I can't wait. That's going to be so much fun. And then a couple days later, I started thinking, you know, after listening to what you and Parvati were talking about, is could Ty be Reichenbacked? Is that possible? Could Ty still be convinced not to play his idol? Is it possible that Ty really will go home with that idol in his pocket?
I'm not going to go home with an idol in my pocket.
He said this three times.
He said it three times.
Three times. So it has been placed on the show, and you have to wonder, does that gun go off? And I don't know. I do feel like if ever there were a time for someone to get Reichenbacked, you know, again, in Survivor history or some version of the Reichenbacking, I don't think that Ty Trang is a bad candidate for this to happen to.
This would be the equivalent of, don't get mad. This would be, I mean, on the level of Marcellus in Big Brother 3 not using the golden power of veto at the Final Four. I mean, that's how crazy this would be.
I'm really upset.
Yeah, right. Sorry about that.
I don't know what that means, so I can't comment on it, but I'm sure you're right.
I mean, that's...
Veto's the one from New Hampshire, right?
But I mean, it's the last night he could play it. For him to not play it, would he potentially be in trouble? I mean, it would be so crazy. I mean, if it were Eric had to give the necklace to somebody else, they would have to all say to him, like, Ty, take it home. Don't you want a souvenir? Don't you want to give it to your boyfriend?
Is there not some sort of con that can be played on Ty that is, you're fine tonight, clearly, they're coming after Aubrey, put the idol on Aubrey and bounce somebody out of the game, and we will be able to march to that final three if they think it's a final three or a final two. And Ty's like, all right, yeah, no, that sounds like the right move to do. I guess I'll do that. You know, especially because he was leaning on Aubrey before to tell him what to do with his idol. Can you not see something like that happening while people actually are targeting Ty, and then Ty is suddenly exposed and Ty goes home?
If that was to happen, though, don't you feel like would we be getting more heat about this episode coming up this week?
We're in the middle of Korong. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, baby.
Wouldn't that be a major, major monumental thing happening?
This whole season has not had heat.
Under
hype, and it's only been heating up the further along we've gotten as we've seen that this is a really fun season. So I would not be surprised if there's no heat going into the episode and suddenly something like that were to happen. I don't think it's especially likely. It's really improbable that Ty would not play his idol. You got to think that you just have to be so sure to not do that. I feel like Ty Trang has to play that idol on himself. But that's exactly why maybe it won't happen, because you think that it's just so guaranteed. And as we've seen with Ty all along the way, few things are guaranteed with that guy.
Boy, for Ty, that would be really, really crazy to have that happen. Could Aubrey do that to him? That my big question with the story of Aubrey, of does she have the guts to really do somebody dirty like that?
I feel like probably not. Or at least she couldn't do it without really, really feeling awful about it, mm-hmm. and probably coming across pretty poorly. I don't think that that's in Aubrey to really sell somebody down the river like that, even if she knows that she needs, or even if she thinks she needs to get rid of Ty. The other thing, too, though, is Ty, and I know that you were talking about this with Steven, is Ty really untouchable at this point? Is Ty somebody that you really have to be so worried about getting to the end against? And I think that the biggest reason why, outside of the fact that he has flip-flopped like a flapjack all over the place, is because he hasn't been particularly great in tribal council. And that might be somebody you want to go to the end with. If you feel confident in being able to articulate your story, but you feel equally confident that Ty is not going to be able to defend his, then I think that you don't have to be quite as worried about going up against a guy who is so super likable like Tai Trang if you have a defensible, well-articulated story under your belt. So maybe she's not that worried about Tai, and maybe this isn't the worst thing in the world that Tai is guaranteed Final Four.
I think that the people in the game are worried about Tai. I think it's only with the help of the story of the season and knowing what people are saying, like coming in and out of the game. I think that the players there probably rate him higher than he ultimately would do. And I think that we have correctly analyzed that he would not do well in the Final Tribal Council, but I think they believe he would do well.
Maybe. You know, I don't know what the state of it is now after this last tribal council where he really came off poorly. Mm-hmm. And came off poorly within the people he's up against right now, but I think also just looked really not great in front of the jury. And I think that, you know, again, you know, we have the bird's eye view. We get to see the thing, and none of these people are able to know what's going on in anybody else's head as it's happening. So maybe they are still worried about Tai. But after that, I feel like you would just have to be able to feel the mood shift in that room. It was really a bad performance.
Mark the Chicken had another big week. No chance at this point Mark the Chicken is eaten. I thought there was a possibility last week if Tai got blindsided and he wasn't around. But at this point, that I think that there is... almost, I would say, I would stake the knowing is know-it-all trophy on the no way Mark the Chicken gets eaten.
Wow, am I going to get your knowing is know-it-all as well as being officially the wiggiest wig at all? Because didn't we make this bet last week? Don't you owe me a chicken dinner if Mark makes it all the way to the top?
Perhaps, yeah. I think I may owe you a chicken dinner.
Yeah, so we can roll the tape back on that. But I think
I don't know if I ever accepted it.
Oh, so now you're gonna do some takebacks here. You're too cheap to take me out for a chicken dinner, Cheapo Depot.
Damn.
I feel like Mark is.
How about a dinner to Red Lobster?
Yeah, I'll go to Red Lobster with you. Sure.
Yeah,
only if we go to the one that Debbie's at.
You got it.
Cheesy bread. I feel like Mark is fine. Mark is fine. If anyone was going to kill Mark, it was going to be Jason. And Jason and Mark were homies. You know, that's what Jason says. He says I could have killed Mark if I wanted to, but Mark was my homie. He really liked Mark the Chicken. There's the great scene where Joe comes up to Jason in this episode and says, hey, what's wrong? What are you up to? And he's like, oh, nothing. Just hanging out with my buddy Mark. So Jason liked Mark. And if Jason likes Mark, no one is really coming after Mark.
Well,
and
maybe
Joe... I don't know. And maybe that would explain why he has been invisible, because CBS doesn't want to give an edit or a story to the person who murders Mark the Chicken. But I don't think that anyone's coming after Mark.
Yeah.
I think Mark is okay.
He's probably fine. Joe was pretty visible, more so than any other episode, really, since, as Mike Bloom pointed out, the PMES, as he put it, the pre-merge edit syndrome.
Right.
Or the EKG edit, if right. you will. Yes. So Joe was super visible this week. Oh, do we have a story for Joe that we're following?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he is, you know, Mark the Chicken is to Tai Trang as Joe Del Campo seems to be to Aubrey Bracco, except that Joe can vote.
But doesn't it feel like that Joe Del Campo is really just falling into that Dan Lembo archetype where that, you know, 4 years from now when we're recording Evolution Strategy Volume 4, whenever he's going to be on the screen, we're gonna like, Joe Del Campo.
Yeah, I think a little bit. Do you mean that in like a positive way, like a nostalgic way?
Yes.
Like, oh, remember Joe?
Yes, I feel like that.
So Joe, like a fine wine gets better with age is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that he's going to be even appreciably better every time he's on the screen as the years go by.
In the future. I feel like we're going to have a lot to say about him in the Evolution of Strategy Volume 4. I feel like we're going to have a lot of talk about his bum showing. I think that there's going to be a lot of discussion about that.
His tan line?
His tan line. Very, very impressive tan line.
Mm-hmm.
Really serious. Really taking care of that tan line. I think there's something about these characters that are out there and you're kind of like, what are they doing out there that can be really fun in retrospect? I don't think that we've really had that moment to reflect on Joe yet. He did take a turn for the Butch this week, which was fun.
Yeah.
You know,
this is really mad about losing the challenge.
He got his Butch Lockley on.
Yeah.
I know that you had flashbacks.
Certainly. Yeah. Sometimes you need all that firewood.
But I do think that, you know, for a man who has that lock bod on lock, he does seem to have a little bit of those Lembo legs. And I think that, you know, it's not a great combination, and it doesn't make for a super compelling person on the show. But I think maybe in the future, we will really appreciate what Joe brought to the table. And I mean, Joe is, you know, it is impressive that a man of his age is out here doing what he's doing on the hardest season of Survivor ever.
The other person that we really haven't spent a lot of time talking about who had a pretty strong week, especially once we got to Tribal Council, was Michelle.
Yeah.
Is her story coming into focus for you?
Yeah. I mean, I and it's nothing against Michelle. I'm loving this season. I'm really enjoying this season. I think that this season has been a real treat, a real surprise. There had been very little hype going into it. And, you know, you kind of expect, like, it's Survivor, so it's going to be fun. But I didn't expect it to be as fun as it's been. And a little bit just here towards the end, I'm losing a little bit of the fun. And some of it is coming down to just, like, the constant banging on the drum of Michelle is destined to win this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It has sucked a little of the air out of it for me, sucked a little bit of the joy out of here. Nothing against Michelle, just purely just, like, the really intense... This is, you know, kind of a dumb thing for me to be saying because we talk about story and stuff and edits and things like that here. But just like the constant edit scrutiny on Michelle has really taken a little bit of the fun of watching Survivor out of it for me just in these past couple of episodes. And Michelle certainly was very visible in this week's episode and was really fighting hard at Tribal Council. And I really enjoyed that. But just a little bit of this Michelle's definitely, definitely, definitely winning thing when I think that there are other people who have played better and have also gotten robust stories, it has bugged me a little bit.
In your ear?
It's in my ear a little bit. Yeah, it kind of earwormed into my head. And it just was this week, especially, I was just feeling a little down about it, to be honest.
See, I was where you were probably coming into this episode, but I feel like that it was such a foregone conclusion that Jason was going to be the losing finalist. And Michelle, she was the only person she could beat at the end was Jason. And that it was going to be Jason losing because everybody was mad at him. And then Michelle winning in that way. And I sort of feel like that if we were so wrong, and I'm not saying we as in me and you, but if people were so wrong in that Jason was going to
be so spelled S-A-O-H
right,
with some accents on there,
that's why I think it's kind of dangerous to assume that it's going to be the Michelle thing as well.
It's hard for me to see how it happens. You know, it's hard for me to see who Michelle beats. You know, can she beat Ty right now? I think that most of these people, you know, excepting Joe, I think could beat Ty. I think that Michelle could beat Joe. I think just about anybody can beat Joe, but I just don't really see how she beats Aubrey or Sydney. Especially, I thought that this Jason exit interview was particularly revealing for that, because you would think that Jason, maybe he was bitter and he would, you know, turn a jury against Sydney, or, you know, maybe, I don't know. I mean, he seemed to respect Aubrey, so I would be less worried about that, but I'd be worried about how he would view Sydney. But he really hyped her up. Again, he says, Sydney's playing a fierce game. I have a lot of respect for her. She made a play and it worked for her. Obviously, her play worked better than mine and she's still in the game and I'm not. And those are the words from somebody who is really respecting his opponent. And he told you that he's thinking about gameplay above all else. So it's just hard for me to see, especially when he says, when he's talking about Michelle, he tells me, Michelle's doing her thing. That's his description of Michelle's game. And I can't really find much of an elaboration on Michelle's game beyond that. So to find the permutation where Michelle is beating Aubrey or Sydney, it's hard for me to see. But if it were to shake out that way, just based on what we've been presented with on the show, it'd be a hard pill to swallow. It would be hard to put my head around how exactly that happened. And right now it's really difficult. But it's just the constant banging of the drum that, like, after this week at Tribal Council, Michelle's, her winner edit is on fire and all this stuff. It's just like, I don't know. It gets a little bit under my skin.
So it'll be interesting to see. I think that's part of the fun of the story for me is to see, you know, if this prophecy that so many people have gleaned from the edit, if they are right, or if they're going to be co-wrong about all this.
I hope it's the latter. I really do. And it is nothing against Michelle, who is probably a fantastic human being.
Bro, I know.
And I don't think that she's playing a bad game. I think she's playing a quiet game. And as we've talked about before, the quiet game can really, really work. And that can be very impressive in its own right. And it can be super successful. And people have played that way and have won in the past. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. I just think that there are better games being played played right now by Sydney and Aubrey, and I really want to see one of those two win. And I think also in terms of what it would mean for the season overall, I think that they are better, either one of them are better ambassadors of this season as a whole to win this whole thing.
I'll also say that you don't know what the final episodes are going to hold. Also, whether it's immunity run, whether it's some sort of like a big blindside. So, you know, if we got to where that ending point is, that there could be, we don't have all the information yet, but I think it's going to be a really fun thing to see if it does play out. Cause I think I do agree with you that you say, well, how would that happen? Especially
I just don't
now,
see it right now. Yeah.
The Jason domino has fallen off.
Right, right. So, I mean, it is interesting. It is interesting to see how that would play out. I just don't want that whole train to be correct. It's just, I really don't. I want it to swerve. I want to see somebody else take this thing.
Yeah, I think it would be very fun to see if it did not come out that way. I think that that would be a really wild thing. And I think it'd just be sort of like, minds would be blown.
Right, minds would be blown. I don't think that the season would be blown.
Definitely not.
As we said last week, I don't think that the winner necessarily dictates how awesome the season was or anything like that. So I think that, you know, however it plays out, whatever path it took to get there, I think that this season has been really fun. And for Michelle to win at this point, it really probably does have to be a pretty interesting road in these final two episodes.
All right, Josh, did you have any exclusive that you tracked down this week?
You know, it's funny. Like I said, the interview with Jason was particularly memorable. It was one that I will not forget for many, many reasons, the least of which is a section that I trimmed off of the interview with Parade. I didn't publish it on Parade because it would not play well in print, but it plays great in audio. I asked him, you know, I didn't include it in the article, how things are with him and Alicia now.
Oh,
And he was like, you know, it's been overblown. Like Alicia and I, we didn't get along out there. But she, you know, she fought, she was a fighter, she was fierce and everything. And we're just different personalities. We're probably not going to be best friends, but you know, we're fine now. In fact, we've been collaborating a little bit in the studio. We've been working on some stuff. Alicia, great songwriter. She and I obviously from Detroit, aspiring rapper. So we've been working on a little thing. And so Jason provided me with a little snippet of his new hot track that he is developing with writing credits to Alicia Holden. Let's give it a listen. Really, really okay stuff. Just like fine. Yeah. Yeah, I'm up in Detroit. Now I'm in Cambodia. Right next to Scott Pollard, my BFF forever. I'm the new Russell Hands, fighting all your idols. I can steal them anywhere from that girl with blonde hair. I hung around on Chandler with my pal Nick Majorano, doing it the Broadway. Debbie's from McDonald's. Oops, I meant Red Lobster, but I only eat breakfast at Ponderosa Kitchen like Walt Jr. eating pancakes. Played this game my way, doing it Thug Dizzle. Out of context, shout out to my homeboy named Mike Chisel. Now I'm up at Tribal, hanging there with Scotty. I have immunity and I got two idols with me. Play that thing for my guy. What's the problem here, Ty? Scott Pollard's gone and now my game is going bye-bye. Wiggler, I got kicked out, so now I'm singing this song. Tell by your voice that this hook is most definitely from
Wonderstruck. Alicia Holden hired me to sing songs to inspire you. Survivor Co-Roll. Steal idols from you. He will bounty hunt you. Jason's from Detroit, and my name is Wanda.
Yeah.
Wow.
So a little bit of a collaboration there. Alicia Holden hired Wanda, of course. We know from earlier in the season that the two of them are linked in their campaign to return to Survivor. And Kyle Jason, who I guess is from Detroit, but sounds an awful lot like a white Jewish kid from Long Island trying to do a Jay-Z impression. So yeah, there you go. That's the exclusive this week.
Wow, who knew?
Who knew? Unapu.
That Wanda's not Becky with the good hair, is she?
No, okay. She's not, but she does love lemonade.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, that was something. I was not expecting that. That was Jason went right into that.
Yeah, he launched.
Wow.
Yeah.
So much more to do here. Only 3 hours left of Survivor Go Wrong.
Yeah.
This Wednesday, and then the finale night.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess technically Only one wiggle room proper, probably, because you and I will do the postmortem on the season. But I don't think that that's going to be a wiggle room. So I think we only have one wiggle room left this season, Rob.
Yeah, only one proper wiggle room left. That's going to be next week. Josh, you have a hashtag for this wiggle room.
Oh, man. It's got to be one of the Sex and the City things you said. I like Carrie Bradshaw.
Carrie Bradshaw? Okay,
let's it's like Carrie Bradshaw with a D at the end of Carrie.
Yeah.
Because I don't need to be carried, bro.
I don't need to be carried, bro.
That was really magical what you did there. I enjoyed that.
All right. Well, so of course you could hear more from Josh Wiggler when you follow him on Twitter. He is at Round Howard. Of course, him and I have a recap of the latest episode of Game of Thrones, episode 3 of season 6. And Josh has a million things coming out this week for The Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah, lots of Game of Thrones stuff. If you like Game of Thrones, I'm your guy.
Also, in case people don't know, Josh, what are you doing about Mr. Robot these
days? Yeah, well, we said this last week. We are doing Mr. Robot rewatch podcasting on Post Show Recaps, myself and Antonio Mazzaro. And by the time you're listening to this, our recap of the first episode ever of Mr. Robot is now out. It's an hour and a half long. It is an hour of spoiler-free discussion followed by 30 minutes of spoiler-filled discussion, so it should be fun listening for people who've already seen the whole show, or for people who have just decided to start watching. You can listen to that first hour without any problems. It's really fun. I think Antonio is killing it as per usual. Really fun podcasting.
You know, the interesting thing about that show is that everybody else refers to him as Robot, and just Sydney always calls him Mr. Robot.
That's right.
She's like, I don't know what Mr. Robot is thinking about these days. But
yeah, she named the show.
Yeah. You better not be hacking.
No, she calls, she calls
don't
it
check
Mr.
me, boo.
Yeah.
She calls it Mr. Robot. She just adds an extra Mr. in front of it.
She's doubly formal.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, next up, we've got David Bloomberg coming in to talk about why Jason lost. That should be a fun conversation because he's been pretty pro Jason the whole way through. So we'll get his analysis on what ultimately was his downfall in the game. Looking forward to that. And also, you could listen to the Evolution Strategy because it's going to be a long Survivor offseason coming up. If you want to start that journey of 1,000 miles, you could check out Chapter 1 of the Evolution of Strategy completely free anytime at evolutionofstrategy.com.
That's right. All of that is available. Please buy it. We need your money. I have no problem saying that.
Okay.
I need it. I need to put food on the table.
All right, everybody. Looking forward to reading your comments. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.
Yeah, I'm up in Detroit. Now I'm in Cambodia. Right next to Scott Pollard, my BFF forever. I'm the new Russell Hands, fighting all your idols. I can steal them anywhere from that girl with blonde hair. I hung around on Chandler with my pal Nick Majorano, doing it the Broadway. Debbie's from McDonald's. Oops, I meant Red Lobster, but I only eat breakfast at Ponderosa Kitchen like Walt Jr. eating pancakes. Played this game my way, doing it Thug Dizzle. Out of context, shout out to my homeboy named Mike Chisel. Now I'm up at Tribal, hanging there with Scotty. I have immunity and I got two idols with me. Play that thing for my guy. What's the problem here, Ty? Scott Pollard's gone and now my game is going bye-bye. Wiggler, I got kicked out, so now I'm singing this song. Tell by her voice that this hook is most definitely from
Wonderstruck. Alicia Holden hired me to sing songs to inspire you. Survivor Coron. Kyle Jason will steal our